My first takeaway is that, thank gosh, it's the same rhythm as every other academic place. I've been in that rhythm basically my whole life, where at, you know, as soon as you get to May or maybe Memorial Day, you get into a not a necessarily the same easy rhythm you did when you were a kid and school was out, but a different rhythm. And you can sort of tackle the bigger projects and really get to work on them. When I was a professor, it meant research or consulting or, you know, sort of the things that you've been waiting to put your hands on. And I think the same opportunity is here now. So it's been a great year. Learned a lot, and I'm still not fully conversant. There's a lot of history to learn at the place, but I'm getting there.
What are the big projects that you're going to turn your hand to over the summer and in the fall?
Well, we're hiring a new vice president for enrollment and marketing. It's a new position for us, and we're really looking forward to somebody who can tie together the many strands that it takes to be competitive recruiting, not just in Illinois, but nationally, and not just to the students to whom we've traditionally appealed, but perhaps to a more geographically, but also economically, ethnically, and racially diverse group than we have in the past.
What qualities will make that person?
Yeah, well, it's not just that person. It's partly what we have to talk about as an institution, what that person's going to have to sell, and then, to put it crassly, how they sell it. And so part of that is modern communication techniques. We have to get out there in front of students and really hit 15 and 16 and 17-year-olds where they live so that they notice us. Part of that is making sure that we are that place that when they look at us, they say, yeah, I want to do that. And one of the great things about a small place like Illinois Wesleyan is that, well, we're small. And so we have tight interactions between faculty and students in ways that larger places just aren't built to do. You can always find that student who, a colleague of mine referred to them as being on the golden path. They're going to be successful and interact well with faculty members no matter where they go. They could be at a larger place, like here on the Illinois State campus. You know, it's built to be a different sort of an institution, but there are students who get a great deal of personal attention from faculty members. It's just that everybody can't have that level of attention. And there are students we really care about who really we know aren't good at getting that kind of attention for themselves, like first-generation students. They don't know how the system works. They're frankly, the evidence shows they're a little bit intimidated by faculty members. They're not going to go in and sit down and say, hey, help me work through this thing. Help me get a deeper understanding of this thing that I'm interested in. And we can do that. And so a lot of what we want to talk about on campus is, how do you do that? How do you make sure that not just those golden path students, but every student who walks through the door gets that really deep personal level of attention so that we're bringing out of them their maximum potential, whatever it may be?
How are deposits running and likely enrollment based on that?
Well, they're running well as far as we know. The world has changed over the past 3 or 4 years. May 1st used to mean something. May 1st means nothing anymore. And so everything that we talk about now is still on the basis of what we think the rest of the recruiting season is going to play out to be. And like many colleges, our recruiting season theoretically could extend until about the first day of class in the fall. So we think we're within 2% plus or minus, but we don't know it at this point.
So have melt rates changed significantly over the last decade, where people put in that first deposit and then say, I changed my mind?
No, that's not really the driver. It's that there are students who sit back and don't make a deposit until later than May 1st. We expected probably 90% of our deposits would be in by May 1st, and that looks like about what's happened. We're getting a steady trickle.
To nail down a financial aid package, though, you really do have to make your deposits. So what kinds of students are waiting longer nowadays?
Well, it's true that the less pressing your financial aid need is, the more flexibility you're going to understand yourself to have, and that's probably accurate. The less financial aid students need, often the more appealing they are to an institution, and so institutions are more willing to have conversations with them. But we're not necessarily seeing that it's students who have small financial need. It's that we're seeing students who have a range of opportunities that are still open to them, and they're trying to nail down where it is they're going to go. That's why we were having conversations on campus about that. We'll never make ourselves irresistible, but certainly less resistible to students. You know, what we really want to talk about is how to draw students who are, in many instances, willing to come and willing to come for less discount than they might have otherwise been willing to come.
So this is not only key to making enrollment targets the last little bit of 2%±2%. These are desirable students from a cash flow perspective, in addition to their own merits as students.
Well, yes, and I think it. Let's be clear, we're not necessarily looking only at students who want to pay the full amount. Every point of discount that we offer to students on net is worth not quite $1 million to us in the end. And so what we'd like to be able to do is think about, well, if we wanted to take a point or 2 points off of the average discount that was offered, that's not very much. Tuition is, in round numbers, not quite $50,000. We're looking at then something, a discount point being about $500. So the question would be, is there a way we can make ourselves sufficiently attractive to the average student that they'd be willing to pay an extra $1,000? And that's not hard to envision.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Eric Jensen, the president of Illinois Wesleyan University. Much has been made of the impact of the Donald Trump candidacy on many parts of American life. Higher education may face an impact of the candidacy regardless of whether he wins, given Trump's stated desire to ban certain cohorts of international students from coming to the U.S. Is there that concern? And do you expect a downturn in international diversity because of this trend of thought in the U.S.?
I think trend of thought and somebody being in a position to affect outcomes are two different things. And I'm not sure that those kinds of ideas, the kinds of ideas that Trump has talked about, have permeated either into higher education admissions or to the students to whom we'd like to attract. I think that with much of this is kind of let's wait and see. There's campaign talk, and then there's the way the world actually may be.
The biggest higher education piece of news in the last couple of weeks has been the Baylor sexual assault fracas and the demotion and subsequent resignation of the president, then chancellor, Ken Starr. It indicates that higher ed is still going through this 5-year-old evolution in how it handles sexual assaults and sexual behavior on campus. How do you see it playing out?
I think there are a couple of separable issues here. One is the inordinate impact that athletics has on some institutions. One of the wonderful things about Illinois Wesleyan and places like it is that we're Division III schools, and so we're banned from giving financial aid that's targeted specifically towards athletes, and we have athletes who are really, truly scholars. Our women's team just won their third national championship in track and field. Those athletes are some of our best students as well. And so I think that kind of integration between athletics and academics that we see in Division III schools in general, and Illinois Wesleyan in particular, we're on the list of academic All-Americans right between Michigan, my alma mater, and Duke, is an example for places like, unfortunately, like Baylor.
Yeah, perhaps I did a disservice to the issue by highlighting Baylor at the start of the conversation, because certainly the investigations that are happening are not limited to the big places. Knox is under investigation in Galesburg for its handling or not handling of sexual assault cases. So small institutions are a significant part of the more than 161 investigations that the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights is opened. When such an investigation is opened, it tends to last a long time, too. So how are even the smaller institutions paying attention to the moving needle on this conversation?
We have a Title IX coordinator who is our associate provost, who takes these matters very seriously. When allegations come up, we will always investigate them with an eye towards fairness and due process. you can't short-circuit that. You have to have every party who's both the accuser and the accused have a chance to have their say. And if the issue is that these procedures can take a long time, well, that's partly a plus, because we want to make sure that we're taking care to do things in ways that are often spelled out explicitly in procedures, that there will be a lag of time between this happening and that happening to allow for sufficient preparation. But we take them very seriously.
The length of time that due process takes, though, comes with another risk, that you can't ban people from campus during that time until justice has been decided. That can place an alleged victim in fear or stress. One of the hot points in procedural matters for many campuses is whether the accused has to undergo student judiciary proceedings in the same room as the accuser. And the accuser is arguing sometimes that there's stress to that involved, having to be in the presence of the person who allegedly raped or sexually assaulted them. How does Illinois Wesleyan negotiate these fine points that are difficult on both sides?
Our process, as I understand it, and I'm going to offer the disclaimer that this happens at an administrative level that appropriately I'm not directly involved with, because in the end I'm going to be the one, if there's a difficult decision, is going to have to weigh the competing evidence. My understanding of it is that we take separate statements from individuals and we use that as input into a process where our best attempt is to give all parties fair representation without direct confrontation.
There are also efforts spearheaded by the Illinois Attorney General to legislate procedural matters, both in the police and in the training of university people. How is Illinois Wesleyan participating in that conversation?
I'm not sure where we are in that conversation. I know that there was a piece of legislation that had been proposed in the current year that had to do with whether or not an institution could ask why an individual had been dismissed from a previous institution, an individual trying to transfer into a given college or university in Illinois. And the proposed legislation was that we couldn't ask, that we couldn't ask why it was that they'd been asked to leave another place. There are obvious dangers there, and it's my understanding that that legislation is now a dead letter. So we're going to be fully compliant with the legislation that we're faced with, and relieved that this isn't a piece that we're going to have to deal with.
It illustrates how difficult it all is in coming from a variety of sectors, the state sector, the federal sector, discussions within higher education as well.
I think that's right. And for me, a lot of, as I started, how's my education coming? One of the biggest things that I've had to learn about is how the Illinois political system works, and the answer, as far as I can tell, is that it doesn't. we have a group of private college and university presidents who went and met with the speaker as a group and then with the governor as a group about 2 weeks ago, and essentially we heard from the speaker that the problem was the governor, and from the governor that the problem was the speaker, and we didn't really see what the path forward might be. One of the issues that I think many people see is that there are long-term structural problems in Illinois. As an economist, these deficits that at some point they're going to have to be dealt with. For example, the governor talks about the long game and trying to take care of these things, and we as college presidents try to make clear that, well, we are your long game in a very real sense, that we're cranking out the graduates who are going to be making a difference to Illinois employers in 5 years or in 10 years, and if we're impeded in our ability to crank them out by, among others, the failure to honor MAP grants, that's going to have long-term consequences in the same way that a failure to reduce a budget gap may have in the long run. And of course, there's the logical story, and then there's the political story. And I think so far the political story is winning, the right verb to use here. The political story is dominating the outcome for sure.
Yeah. Much has been made about how public higher education as a brand in Illinois has been damaged by the budget standoff. But how much is private education taking a hit as well?
That's a good question. There are some privates that apparently are up in enrollment. It looks like some of the Chicago urban Loyola DePaul kind of institutions are up a little bit, and the rest of us seem to be holding roughly steady. Where the students who aren't going to the Illinois Publics are going isn't clear. It's a rumor mill at this point. Did I mention that we're still not sure what enrollment's going to be in different places? And I think that's true. I think currently the thinking is that Iowa is benefiting, that Missouri has issues, and so Iowa, Minnesota, to some extent even Wisconsin institutions are seeing more Illinois students. But at this point, that's anecdotal.
Okay. And how much is the MAP grant uncertainty affecting you?
We're reassuring our students that we're in their corner. We're doing everything that we can do for them. The students on their bills were carrying a sort of an unpaid debt into the spring, and so we put together a grant program where we essentially wiped that debt off for the fall semester of last year. And in the spring semester, we offered every student a combination of grants and loans, depending on their financial situation, to bridge the gap left by the state's failure to honor their commitment to MAP. And we've told both prospective students and continuing students that we're gonna work with them should we need to do this again in the coming year. What specific form that'll take is up in the air, but it's one of those things where it's morally the right thing to do. We want to shield our students from the shenanigans in Springfield to the extent that we can. It's not their fault, and these are the most vulnerable students. If they are MAP recipients, they're relatively low income. They need our help. It's also best for us financially to keep those students in place, and so we will work with the students.
There is no free lunch. What domino had to topple for you to make that guarantee and that flexibility for them?
Well, we do what a family would do if they're faced with an unexpected expense. We had to dip into our savings, our endowment to do that. We have a very supportive board of trustees who are both understanding of the situation in Springfield and supportive of the students and the institution, and so we're able to do that. That's obviously finite. Just like a family, you've only got so much in the savings account to draw upon, and we certainly have limits to what we can do. Our limits are many other privates in the state are facing probably tighter limits, and it's a very tough situation.
Eric Jensen is the president of Illinois Wesleyan University. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.